Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right, Orlando Franklin and Tony D in for Stokely and Zach. All right, D-Mac and Zach were talking about Garrett Bowles yesterday. D-Mac feels if the Broncos give up on Bowles too soon, this might be a mistake.
Like, you got to commit to certain guys. So when you draft a guy in the first round, if you don't commit to him, you're a bad organization. If you don't commit to the guys you're paying, if you give them a quick hook, you're a bad organization. And so Garrett Bowles, who drives everybody nuts, right? I don't care. You got to see it through because you're just going to be chasing, 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 and you don't want to be chasing. I mean, if it doesn't work out at the end of the day, fine, but you've got to give him every shot.
All right, Orlando, do you agree with this? They've got to see through with Bowles, or has he shown us what his ceiling is?
No, you got to see it through. I mean, this is the thing. You just got a new offensive line coach who is a well-renowned coach in the league. Everybody loves him. Everybody believes that he's going to be able to elevate the play of Garrett Bowles. And has Garrett Bowles got better since his rookie campaign? Absolutely. He has. But he's getting better at, like, a third-round rate. You know, he's not getting better as far as a first-round pick and what you see a first-round picks have done in the past. You know, you want him to be that guy that you just put out there and you do not worry about. You know, the quarterback's blind side is just going to be a stud out there for you for years to come. And he has not shown the capability of doing that yet. But now you just went and got a Mike Munchak. And Mike Munchak's going to give it his best. And Garrett Bowles is going to have to show that he was worthy of being that first-round pick for the Denver Broncos 2 years ago. And if he doesn't, I still think that you give him another year. So I don't agree with getting rid of him after 3 years. What I would do with Garrett Bowles is what the Jacksonville Jaguars did with Luke Jokel a couple years ago. He was drafted to play left tackle for Jacksonville, and then about 3 years into it, they ended up moving him to left guard. And then he ended up playing a couple years in Seattle at left guard. Jacksonville didn't decide to retain him after his contract was up, his rookie deal was up. So with Garrett Bowles this year, I'm going to let him play left tackle. If I don't see a significant improvement that I would hope that I would see with a guy like Mike Munchak, well, then I know that left tackle is not the position for him, because Mike Munchak hasn't been able to get him to be the stellar player that we wanted to play. But now, you know, we already got Ron Leary that we would have kicked out the door this year had he not had that injury guarantee. So now I could move a guy like Garrett Bowles to left guard now, who needs to be athletic, because your left guard's your guy that pulls and you want to get him in space and you want to get him up to linebacker, where Garrett Bowles might be able to play at a higher level at that position where he's not really thinking. And also, you're allowed to hold a little bit better at the left guard position rather than at outside at those tackle positions.
All right, so is this technique or is this something else with Bowles?
Oh, it's technique. It's definitely technique. I've seen him play games where he just absolutely balled. And then I've seen him play games where it's just like, come on. I mean, this is not the MMA. This is not the UFC. Like, what are you doing? And it all comes down to technique. Where he struggles is he'll come off the line of scrimmage and he'll go back in his kick slide. And initially, it'll be great. But then he struggles with the fact of a defender now becoming to get even with him. And now he wants to basically take a drop step with his outside leg and basically open up his shoulders and turn it towards the sideline. Well, when you do that now, it just comes second nature for your right hand to come with it. Now and that right hand ends up behind and on the back of the defender. So what Garrett Bowles needs to do, instead of when that defender becomes even with him, he needs to stay in his kick slide and be disciplined with it to continue to expand the pocket and create width and keep that defender away from the quarterback. What he also does with the drop step of dropping in the bucket now, like I was talking about earlier, not right. Only does he put his hand on the back of that defender, he also opens up his shoulders and now creates a beeline straight angle for that defender to the quarterback as well.
So I agree with D-Mac on this situation in terms of he's a first-round pick and you don't give up on first-round picks completely, because I think he's right. I think this it says a lot about you as an organization. It says a lot about the player if it busts out and you bust out too early. But there also is a risk of if it is a bust, let's say it doesn't matter who it is, if it doesn't work out, you do eventually have to make a decision on that player. You can't keep him around just because there's ego involved. Well, he was a pick and we evaluated him and he was supposed to be good and let's try to make this work. There's got to be a happy medium between the two.
And here's the thing. Has John Elway been good at his first round picks? No, he hasn't. I mean, he hasn't been great. He's been okay. I look at 2011, Von Miller. The year after that, Derek Wolfe in the second round. He wasn't a first round pick. But then the year after that, Sylvester Williams leaves after 4 years. The year after that, Sylvester Williams, you didn't take up his fifth year option. Bradley Roby, you took up his fifth year option. And then you got the Paxton Lynches. You got not only Paxton, now you got Garrett Bowles. But then you hit on Bradley Chubb. So has he been great on his first round picks and evaluating those guys? No, because if you're great, you'd retain these guys, and not only would you retain them, you would at least be picking up everyone's fifth year option. You know, you cut Paxton after 2 years, so he hasn't been great, but first round picks do get that extra time to figure it out. You know, you don't get put on the bench. So this year for Garrett Bowles is going to be his final year for the Broncos and Mike Munchak and Rick Scangarello to see if he could play at that left tackle position. If he cannot play at that left tackle position, the Broncos are not going to walk away from Garrett Bowles in year four. You already know that we're going to walk away from Ron Leary. We already know that at some point maybe that Elijah Wilkins will be a restricted free agent or a restricted free agent next year. What are we going to do with him? So there's going to be other decisions that we need to make where if Garrett Bowles doesn't play up to what we hope he played with this year at the left tackle position, he's going to end up moving inside to maybe a left guard or maybe even the right guard position. But with his skill set, being as a little smaller of a guy, his body frame, he's going to be better suited at that left guard position.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that. Is he better suited to be on the inside of the line?
If he could gain about 10 pounds and sustain it, I think he'd be a great candidate to play right or left guard for the Denver Broncos. I think he has average feet at the tackle position, but will have an exceptional feat at the guard position with going against bigger guys that tend to be a little bit more slower. And he has great flexibility as far as being able to sit down when guys do bull rush. So, and when you're playing on the inside and you know guys are going to bull rush you almost play in, play out, and now you could expect it, he's going to be able to sit down on that. And what the biggest thing for me was when I got moved from right tackle to guard, the game slowed down tremendously at the guard position because now the defender was right there and it was a bigger body and they were slower guys. I mean, at the tackles in the league, I mean, they're mismatched. I mean, I think I'm a little biased, Tony, when I'm going to say this, but, you know, I think that's the biggest mismatch on the field. The offensive tackle going against the defensive end. You got some of these defensive ends running 4-5. Look at a guy like Jevon Clowney a couple years ago. I mean, just ridiculous speed, but also they're going forward. And now as offensive tackle, you're going backwards. So I think it's a huge mismatch. But I think if Garrett Bowles was to move from the left tackle position to either left guard or right guard, I think the game would slow down tremendously for him. And he'd be able to keep those defenders in front of him a lot more easier than when he's out there on that island at one of those tackle positions.
All right, looking back at the 2018 draft class for the Broncos, how would we grade that draft? We'll talk about that coming up. Part Orlando Franklin and Tony D in for Stokely and Zach. ESPN Insider revisited the draft class for the Broncos of 2018, gave each team a grade, and then regraded them based on how those class performed. When it came to the Broncos, they originally graded the Broncos draft as a B+. Their new grade for that class is an A-. All right, so here's why. Here's a couple of things that they pointed out. John Elway really needed a strong 2018 draft class after a few down years. Although it wasn't enough to get the Broncos back into the playoffs, it's safe to say Elway hit a home run. The star of the class wasn't even in the class. Undrafted running back Philip Lindsay quickly passed up third-round pick Royce Freeman on a way to a Pro Bowl season, totaling over 12,000 yards from scrimmage with 10 touchdowns. Top pick Bradley Chubb was the number one ranked pass rusher, according to the site. He showed in his rookie season with 12 sacks on the other side of Von Miller. And Chubb is a stud. Broncos also got a promising first season from wideouts Cortland Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton, combined for 72 catches and 6 touchdowns. Sutton figures to be a starter. Orlando, do you agree with this new grade class for the Broncos, according to the ESPN Insider article?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The Broncos had 10 draft picks last year, Tony, and out of the 10, there was 9 rookies that were active at some point this year for the Broncos. And I'm also including the 11th rookie that we all know about, that he wasn't a part of the draft class, but he might be the guy that was, if it's not Bradley Chubb that had the best season out of the rookie class, he might have be arguably the best guy. But, I mean, he also went to a Pro Bowl in Phillip Lindsay. But, I mean, that's good talent when you could bring in 10 guys in the draft and then a total of 11 after you bring in Phillip Lindsay from being an undrafted free agent, but 9 of those guys are active at some point this year. That says that you're drafting well.
Yeah.
You're doing the right thing, and you're evaluating these guys really well, because for these guys to be active, it's not enough just to be on the 53-man roster. I mean, you only get 46 spots on game day. So for 9 of these guys to be active at some point this year and be on that 46-man roster, it says that the Broncos are trending in the right direction with this young rookie class.
All right, so they got playing time as rookies, but now it's coming up into this season. So if you look at this draft class, what do you expect this upcoming year in 2019?
Oh, I'm expecting a huge leap from a guy like Courtland Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton. When they came in last year, they were the 3rd and 4th wide receiver on this team. Well, now they're going to be the 2nd and 3rd behind Emmanuel Sanders. So they've moved up in the depth chart. So I'm expecting their play on the field to be up a notch from what we saw last year as well. I don't know how much better Phillip Lindsay could get, to be honest with you. I feel like if he's just able to sustain what he was able to sustain last year, we're going to be in great shape with that, a guy like Phillip Lindsay. I look at a guy like Sam Jones. Is he going to get on the field? What's the situation there? Are we going to look at him at the center position because Connor McGovern struggled last year? Or we're going to look at him as a true guard because of the fact of Ron Leary with his health issues and not being available during the last 2 years for the Broncos for all 16 games? Or are we going to look at him and say, you know what, let's compete for the right guard spot with a guy like Connor McGovern because last year during the season, Connor McGovern got benched at one point. So what are we going to do with Sam Jones? You know, so I'm expecting to figure that out as soon as OTAs start here in the next couple weeks and see exactly how much he's going to play for this team. And if the Broncos really truly believe that they made the right decision when they went and drafted him, because right now there's holes on this offensive line. And you took Sam Jones last year in the draft in the 6th round. Is he good enough to get on the field after basically redshirting for a year in the NFL and taking the time to learn this scheme and get bigger, faster, and stronger? Now, is he going to be able to come out and be able to compete for one of these positions? So I'm expecting a lot from this class. I'm definitely expecting a lot. I look at last year as a building block, and you know, that's our cornerstone. That's us moving forward. What direction are we going to go into? But these guys all need to be able to take a jump in their 2nd year. But for guys like Phillip Lindsay and Bradley Chubb, I don't know how they do that because they played so phenomenal last year in their first year in the league.
All right, coming up in April with the draft with the 10th pick, best player overall, or there's still needs that they've got to address quickly and get that guy that fills those needs?
You got to address your needs. You can't just go best player overall. You got to go get your needs. And right now, your biggest need on this team is the inside linebacker position. We don't got a guy. We really don't got a guy. Do I like Josie Jewell? Absolutely. Do I think he's going to be a great player in this league? Absolutely. But I look at Josie Jewell and say he's a 1st and 2nd down linebacker. Todd Davis the exact same way. We got to go get a 3 down linebacker that can be involved in all the defensive packages when you call everything on the defense, because we just let the guy walk that was doing that for the last couple years with the Broncos and Brandon Marshall.
Because can he replace Marshall? I don't think he can, but do you think he can?
No, not right now. I mean, can he continue to study his playbook and learn this game and get better in coverage? Yes, he can. But if you're walking into the season right now and saying Josie Jewell is going to be my 3 down linebacker for all 16 games, it's going to be a big drop. And right now the Broncos have struggled for the last couple years at covering the tight end. You're going to have the same exact issue with a guy like Josie Jewell and also covering the running backs out the backfield as well.
There's an interesting line in this article, too. It comes at the end where he says, overall, this is a great class, talking about last year's class. And if Flacco is competent in 2019, Denver could be a sneaky playoff team. Buy that?
Wow. Wow.
It's a bold line.
Wow.
I mean, you look at the division. It's not, you know, I mean, listen, yeah. There's wild card battles. A lot of teams have upgraded. A lot of teams are good. Sneaky good playoff team if Flacco is competent based on the analysis of the draft class in 2018.
Oh, I believe the Broncos can make the playoff. I wasn't saying the wow for that, Tony.
Here's the deal. I think anybody can make the playoffs because I know I've been doing this league for a long time. I know anybody can make the playoffs at any time. There isn't a team that goes, we give up. I mean, maybe some, but you know, not every team goes, nah, don't come see us for 4 or 5 years. We're going to go do our thing over here.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a 6-10 team with the additions. This is a nice statement.
Yeah. I was saying wow, basically, because it says that Flacco is competent in 2019, you know. I think that we definitely upgraded from the quarterback position of last year. So I think that we're going to be a playoff team or a team that's going to improve record-wise and be at least 9-7 because of the quarterback play and because of these young guys, this rookie class that was graded as what, a B-plus initially, then an A-minus, you know, after seeing what they did this past year. I think they're going to be able to, you know what, too, that I really like about the Broncos, when you had guys out there that might have had some attitude problems that everybody was talking about, let's go get like an A-B. Well, you know what, that was going to be a cancer. The Broncos didn't think twice about that to go get a guy like that, you know what I mean? They went and got a leader at the quarterback position that you don't hear controversy, you don't hear people talking about him, and he wasn't a one-hit wonder. You know, people respect Joe Flacco. People like Joe Flacco, and you know, he's always been doubted, and he's went about his business week in, week out. He hasn't had no meltdowns in the media. He just takes care of business. So they went and got some high character guys to come and show these rookies, well, now they're going to be in their sophomore season, how to continue to be professionals in this league and try to elevate their game by doing things the right way.
I just said, I used your argument yesterday with a friend of mine. I said, when he's going off on Flacco again, and I said, he's going to throw more touchdowns at Case Keenum, so enough. I don't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah.
I don't, what else do you want? I can't promise anything from Flacco, but I can tell you this, he's going to throw more than Keenum did in touchdown passes.
Yeah, exactly. And also, he's going to compete a lot harder than Case did on third down. I mean, like I said, I keep on saying, more often than not, I used to watch, we would watch the game in here while we were doing our Facebook Live throughout the season, and me and my co-host John Davis, we would watch the game and I'd be like, hey, how much you want to bet that the ball's getting thrown short of the sticks on third down? And we would literally do that week in, week out, and towards the end of the season, we started betting on how much short of the sticks on third down. Is it going to be 2 yards short? Is it going to be 5 yards short? And that's how we went about it, because that's what we expected out of a guy like Case Keenum. At least we know with Joe Flacco, he's going to come in here, he's going to compete on third down, and he's going to be looking to throw the ball at least to the sticks to now get a new set of downs or pass the sticks for a huge play.
Thank God he didn't make it a drinking game.
We were working. Couldn't do that. Right.
Register for the Fans 5K Bracket Challenge presented by Breaks Plus. Compete against us. Host your office pool. Also, a chance to win $5,000. Register at 1043thefan.com. That is 1043thefan.com. It is the 5K Bracket Challenge presented by Breaks Plus. Another former Steeler has thrown Big Ben under the bus, and we'll discuss that next. Orlando Franklin and Tony D in for Stokely and Zach. All right, we got Drew Locke and Dwayne Haskins checking in for pre-draft visits. Mike List saying that Drew Locke is coming in. Andrew Scheffler with the idea that Dwayne Haskins is coming in. So, again,
we're into the Broncos?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
What?
I don't want to get this tattoo. What do you mean, what?
Don't get this tattoo. I mean,
I already said it.
You're worried you're going to get a tattoo? This maybe just as a formality. You don't have anything to worry about.
Oh.
You a little nervous?
A little bit.
Tell me about the tattoo. What do you have to get?
So if the Broncos take a quarterback at 10 this year with the 10th overall pick, right, or if they move up before 10 to get a quarterback, I have to now get that quarterback's number that he wore in college in his school colors.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, I was on the morning show. It was really early. It was a stupid bet. Never should have made it.
Do you have tattoos?
Yeah, I have four, but they're big.
All right, so they're big. So this is not I've never done this before. I've never had a tattoo. So you're good at least with the process. You just don't want that. You just don't want that added to the art.
Yeah.
I got
I will tell you this. I like that the Broncos are crossing all their T's and they're dotting their I's.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, a report came out the other day that hey, the Giants might not be interested in Drew and Dwayne Haskins. So, hey, you know, what better way than the Broncos need to do their due diligence? I always mess up that
word. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But bring them in for the visit.
They got to go check it out.
Take a look, see what happens.
Really sit there and properly vet a guy, because if you could draft a quarterback, I mean, you're better for it at the end of the day, because you got your guy for the next 10 or 15 years. Now you don't have to continue looking into the draft. And you know, you got to realize next year, yeah, it is a better quarterback class, but who's to say that we're going to be able to move up to get a Tua, a Fromm, or a Herbert? I mean, it's going to be hard to get up in the first five picks, probably. I mean, all three of those guys will be gone. It's going to be really hard. I mean, the Broncos lost 10 games last year, lost double digits games, only won 6, and they're picking at 10 this year. So how many games do you really have to lose to be picking at 5?
Yeah, that's true. And there's no anticipation that with all the changes that they're going to be a 2-14 team, for crying out loud.
Exactly. So yeah. I love the fact that they are just saying, hey, you know what? We're going to properly vet all these quarterbacks, because if there's a guy there at 10 and from here on to the draft, somehow we start and we're loving him and we're really high on him now, you know what? We're going to pull the trigger, but at least they properly vetted him, and it's not the Paxton Lynch experiment where you were waiting on Peyton to make his decision, and all of a sudden he made his decision in March, and then all of a sudden Brock left, and now you got stuck. So at least they're taking the proper precautions this year, this time around, to properly vet the quarterback. And you know, if they get a quarterback, unfortunately for me, I'll be getting a tattoo, but I'll be happy for them that they finally figured that out.
They didn't peg the location of the tattoo, did they? Did they say it'd be on the arm or the back?
No, it's probably going to be like on my calf or something.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
So, but think about the conversation piece that becomes. What if he becomes a star? Like, what if they draft Drew Locke, for example? He just becomes the next franchise great quarterback. Then you could point to it and say, well, you know.
Yeah.
Look how much I love Drew Locke. I got his Missouri-colored number on my calf.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I told him, I said, listen, you know, I kind of backpedaled a little bit, because I was like, well, you know what? If they draft a quarterback at 10, I would get their college colors, but I should still be able to get their NFL number.
Yes, because, that's true.
I mean, if they really have that success, you know, I could say, hey, you know what? I was the first to do this. You know, got his NFL number, but also got his college colors. Like, I was on board from day one.
And nobody will remember that you lost a bet, dude. I mean, like, years from now, they won't go, well, you had to do that because you lost a bet. You say, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I was a believer from the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? That's exactly right. That's how you roll that. That's how you spin it. Then the people go, wait a minute, I thought, well, maybe I misremembered. Maybe I don't have that story correct. And then you remind them that they absolutely don't have that story correct, and you were a believer from the start.
Exactly. So I like how you're thinking, Tony.
That's how you do it. At least that's how it works in my house. And my wife says, did you do? And I go, yes, I told you I would do that. She goes, well, I don't remember that. Well, you're obviously misremembering. So let's just end that.
That's how it goes. It's opposite in my house. It's the opposite way.
All right. So the Steelers are in a weird situation because Le'Veon Bell says Ben Roethlisberger wants to win his way. Speaking to Sports Illustrated, he said, quarterbacks are the leaders. It's what it is. But you're still a teammate at the end of the day. You're not Kelvin Colbert, who's the GM. You're not team president Art Rooney. The organization wants to win. Tomlin wants to win. Ben wants to win, but Ben wants to win his way, and that's tough to play with. He said Ben won a Super Bowl, but he won a Super Bowl when he was younger, and that's all the stage where he tries to control everything and the team lets him get there. A little too much. Is this gripes or is this how it works?
I this is how I look at it from my standpoint. Le'Veon Bell, exceptional runner, right?
Right.
Good running back, good out of the backfield, catches the ball. Ben Roethlisberger, no. Has to be able to understand defenses, has to be able to make every throw, has to be able to audible, put his running backs in the right position, put his offensive line in the right position, but also doing that and delivering the ball down the field. So I don't have a quarterback wanting to win their way because they're controlling the whole offense. Everything is ran through him. The quarterback touches the ball every play on offense. The running back doesn't. I could see why guys would be frustrated if there's special treatment, but, I mean, that's kind of how it goes. You know, when you're a quarterback and you've won a Super Bowl and you've been the starter there for years and, you know, running backs, we see, It constantly changed, Tony. Every position constantly changed. You might be there for 4 years. You might be there less. You might be there for your whole career. When you have a great quarterback, he typically is there for his whole career, 15, maybe 20 years. So he's the position that changes the least. And if he wants to do things his way and the coaches believe in him and believe that in how his view of football and his leadership skills, that's the way it's going to go. And as a player, that's the quarterback of your team. That's the guy that's going to give you the best opportunity to win week in, week out. And because of that, now, if I'm a player, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and do what I'm asked to do.
This is what I don't understand about these comments, though, from Bell. Well, then, what do you mean by this? It's one thing to throw these cliches out, right? He wants to win his way. Well, tell us exactly what that way is and how it was detrimental to you. What was he doing? How was he acting? Give us examples. Don't just throw it out there that he wants to win a certain way. Because, listen, the Steelers, despite the fact that they've risen at a time where Peyton Manning and the Broncos were going to the Super Bowls and Tom Brady and the Patriots are going to the Super Bowls, and even Joe Flacco and the Ravens went to that one. Roethlisberger still has two, and they're an organization that gets to the postseason. You don't mess with that if you're an organization from the quarterback perspective. You don't change everything for, like you said, a running back that may come in for be productive for 3 or 4 years. You go with what the quarterback that's been there for 13, 14 seasons.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I 100% agree with you. In this game, it's so hard to win a game week in, week out. I don't care whose way we win, as long as we win. I mean, you go through OTAs, you go through mini camps, you ramp it up for the 6 weeks that you have your time off, and that's when you really got to get ready to play football games, because now, you know what, you got to be in camp shape and be able to lug around 20 pounds and be able to go through those early morning practices, those late night practices, the rehab, the treatments. Then you get to training camp and you're just beating your body up week in, week out, day in, day out. And then you get 1 day a week off, and then you get ready to go grind for 16 weeks. I don't care whose way we win, as long as we win. That is me as a player. I mean, if we win, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how we did it. I played for Tim Tebow. I played for Kyle Orton. I played for Peyton Manning. I played for Phillip Rivers. And they all have different styles of play, and they all like different things. And as long as we win, it does not matter to me, because you work too hard week in, week out, and for the whole year. Football, the NFL season, people get it misconstrued and think that it's only 4 months. No. As soon as the regular season's over, come January, guys start preparing for next year's season. Football is 365 days out of the year. I don't care how we win, as long as we win.
It's a Bud Light Fast Break Wednesday. Enjoy the first and second round tournament action responsibly this week. Bud Light, game day's favorite light lager. Jeff Eierman says that the Broncos will be in the playoffs this year. Should we believe him? We'll discuss that next. It's Orlando Franklin and Tony D in for Stokely and Zach. Oh, this is going to be fun. Mike Kliss asked Jeff Hierman yesterday if the Broncos are a playoff team in 2019. Hierman said, yes, write it down, yes. You buying this, Orlando? A playoff team, write it down. Now, listen, players get asked this all the time, and they all say the same thing. Yes, of course, no one's going to say no.
Yeah.
No one's going to say, nah, you know, I think we're going to struggle a little bit this year.
Yeah.
But maybe look at 2 years from now, we should be good.
Yeah, with a player, you want your players to be able to be that confident and go out there and say that.
Of course.
I mean, if any one of the 53 guys on your team don't believe that, you need to get rid of him right now. You know, because you got a great coach in Vic Fangio. You went and got a guy in Rick Scangarello that's going to create some more dynamic plays for this offense this coming season. So he was backed into a corner with the question, and that's how anybody should, that's on the Denver Broncos or anybody that's in the NFL should answer that question.
Yeah, because no one's going to come up to them if they go 7-9 and go, man, you said write it down. It's what you want your players to say.
Yeah.
Right? This is what you want your players to say. By the way, you know what my biggest pet peeve is? And I get really riled up, but maybe you can shed some light on this because, you know, I don't really know, but it drives me crazy when I hear, like, a caller will call or I'll talk to a fan and they'll say, well, they're going to, you know that team is going to be tanking this season so they can get a number one pick. I'm like, you ever been in an NFL locker room? You're going to get 53 guys to throw games so they can get a draft pick? Are you insane?
I left the Broncos, and my first 4 years in the league, we went 4-8 we went 8-8 my first year and won the AFC West, made it to the second round in the playoffs. Then with Peyton, we went 13-3 and then followed by 13-3 get to the NFL loss. We get to the Super Bowl, lose that game. The following year, we go 12-4 We lose to Indianapolis in the second round of the playoffs. I get to the Chargers, and we go 4-12 my first year there. And there was never one time where we went into games and we're like, yeah, we're going to tank.
Yeah.
Or we're tanking for this person, or we're not going to win this game. Week in, week out, we believe that we could win the football game. It just didn't happen. So, and nobody wants to be in a game where you're losing. You're talking about guys that have been playing and competing in sports. And let's just look at it like this. Even if a guy plays in high school, you just started playing football in high school, you skipped little league and you just started in high school, and then you played 4 year of high school football, and then you go to college and you got to be 3 years removed from high school in order to enter the draft. So now you play another 3 years there. So that's 7 years that you've been competing at in this sport, and you got to be a dominant player in order to get a scholarship from high school, but then you got to be really a dominant force to get drafted or to get a look in the NFL. So you already have that competitive nature in you. So no guy is ever going to come in and say, yeah, well, you know what, like we're not there yet, or we're not close, and we need to keep on rebuilding. Everybody believes that you're one player away, or you're one play away from making a huge impact in this league and being able to win a ton of football games.
I've always told people, like, go down that rabbit hole. If you really do believe that teams tank and players tank, go down that rabbit hole of being a player. In this league, where you get cut and you can lose your job, you really want video tape of you missing tackles on purpose, missing blocks on purpose, fumbling the ball on purpose. You really want that? But just so a team could get, the team you're playing for could get a draft pick that will probably take your job in the first place?
Exactly.
Like, what are you thinking? Go down the line of logic until you reach a point where you go, nah, that's not really happening. Because it shouldn't take you that far to go down to realize that's a dumb thing to say.
Yeah, that's the most ridiculous thing to say. When you lose football game, that triggers change. When you have losing seasons, because what happens immediately? The head coach gets fired. Then they bring in a new head coach, and then that head coach starts assembling a new staff. Well, you don't know if that new staff and that new head coach sees you as being on that team. So week in, week out, you're going out as a player. You're fighting, especially when it starts going really bad, you're fighting for your job. You're fighting for job security next year. That hopefully when the new coach comes in, he takes a look at the tape and he's like, hey, that number 74, he plays hard. I want him. You know, let's not release him. Let's try to bring him back, because that's all that they could judge you by initially. Because the head coach, Vic Fangio, you think Vic Fangio has met everybody that's on this roster yet? No. Guys are out of town. Guys are traveling. Some people don't live here in the offseason. And then guys that do live here in the offseason, half of them don't want to work out at Dove Valley because you got to be there every day. So you might be down the street at another one of these training facilities working out there, just so you don't have to go into the facility and see the same guys that, you know, once the season starts, that you're going to be seeing day in and day out.
Do you look at this Bronco team and the way they're this approach, right? Run the ball, play good defense. Is it something that can help them win or be competitive in a division where the Chiefs score like crazy, the Chargers do the same thing, Antonio Brown's with the Raiders? I mean, there's a different look on those other three teams than what Denver may do on their offense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I see them being able to compete in this division by running the ball and playing good defense. Because if you run the ball, you control the clock. If you're able to be very successful in the run game, not only do you control the clock, but you eliminate possessions for a guy like Patrick Mahomes or Phillip Rivers that's in this division. So you're able to now just keep that clock going, keep it, stay in bounds, and create less positions and less opportunities for guys like Patrick Mahomes to light it up. So it helps you out on offense by running the ball decently. But on defense, if you're playing good defense and you're able to match up well against the LA Chargers and match up well against the Kansas City Chiefs, now your defense is able to go out there and play with confidence because they know that they match up better than any other team that are playing against these high-powered offenses.
So let's get to the division for a second, because the Tyreek Hill situation in Kansas City really is interesting, because it throws the Chiefs little bit for a loop here. If he's suspended and they don't have him available, the defense has changed completely. There's a belief that it'll be better, right? But at the same time, you don't know. There's an outlier here with that division where you could go, I don't know exactly what the Chiefs are going to do. I may know what the Chargers are going to do. I think maybe the Raiders could be better with Antonio Brown, but I'm still not 100% sure. But with the Chiefs, that's still a question mark.
Yeah. No, it is. I want to ask you a question real quick, Tony. Given the fact that we saw what happened with a Kareem Hunt this year, with the Chiefs organization, that they literally severed ties immediately with Kareem Hunt when all that stuff came out. Because of that now, and you made an example of your star running back, and because of the fact of the matter is you took a hit once he walked out the building and you decided to release him, do you now just do the exact same thing with a guy like Tyreek Hill and just make an example and say, listen, this is in this organization, we're not going to tolerate that. And do you just make a bold statement to all your players? It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're a great player on this team. We're going to walk away. Or because you look at how bad of a dip you took when you let Kareem Hunt go this past season in the run game, now that you weren't able to run the ball effectively after you decided to release him, do you now just say, hey, you know what? We don't want to release Tyreek Hill because we don't want to take that big hit and take away that dynamic deep threat for a guy like Patrick Mahomes.
I think if you're the Chiefs, you have to release Tyreek Hill if indeed his situation is as egregious as Kareem Hunt. And the reason you do that is because with Kareem Hunt, you didn't just make it wasn't a football decision. It was a community decision. It was a decision to say to the community and the fans, this is what our organization stands for. Yes, we want to win football games. Yes, he helps us win football games. But the larger picture is, this is what we believe. This is how we want to go about situations like this in our organization. For you, the fan, to look at this organization and say, look, we don't tolerate this. If you don't do that with Tyreek Hill, you lose the PR that you had when you did it with Kareem Hunt. All of those things that you said to your fan base, we're an organization you can be proud of because we don't tolerate this. Yes, it may cost us football games, but in the long run, this is who we are. No. If you don't do it with Tyreek Hill, then you lose all of that goodwill immediately. If you'd say, well, and they won't actually admit this, but if the feeling is, well, they're not going to get rid of Tyreek Hill because they want to win games. But then you go back to Kareem Hunt and say, well, then why did you do it then and make a big statement about that instead of saying, wait, let's process this a little bit. Maybe there's another way to do this where we go with the suspension. We work with them through it. The Browns pick him up. And if he plays for the Browns at all, right, yeah, then he's an available player in this league.
Yeah.
But as an organization, if you're saying, look, we know that. We know he can play in this league. You know he's going to come back. You still stood on your soapbox and said, this will not be tolerated here.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And I look at the situation that's going on with Pittsburgh, and that's why I agree with you. I mean, had the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, basically put their foot down when Big Ben back years ago got into his trouble,
right,
with being in the bathroom and this and that. You know, had they put their foot down, you know, now maybe Art Rooney and Mike Tomlin, now maybe you don't go through the issues that you went through with a guy like AB and coming in and yelling at Dick LeBeau in the defense saying he's the franchise guy. And you don't go through guys like Le'Veon Bell maybe holding out now because you created a certain tradition. You don't go through the AB just missing practice and not showing up because you've put your foot down and you said, hey, this is the only way that we're going to do things here. So I agree. When you're able to make an example and you're able to put your foot down and say, this is what we believe in. This is the culture we're trying to create. And this is how we want to be in this community in Kansas, or whether it's the Steelers, whether it's the Broncos, wherever you're at, whatever team, you got to continue to follow suit and continue to do those things year in, year out. Doesn't matter what type of player or who the player is.
It just doesn't make sense from a standpoint of if you do it for one, you don't do it for the other based on football decision. Because again, if you make this big public plea about who you are and you change that or you sacrifice that, it says a lot about you, more about you, and it doesn't sit well. Fans may enjoy it from the football perspective, but there's always going to be a thing of, well, all right, they don't really believe in any of these things that they were making a big deal about a year ago.
Yeah, no, absolutely. here's my thing, right? With anything that you do in the NFL, there's consequences and repercussions. If I'm a backup quarterback and you're the starting quarterback, we should have the same consequence and repercussion. We're both in the top 1%. 1% of college athletes make it professional. You know, it's extremely hard to get to the NFL. We're both making money that in the world, we're in the 1% of as far as our income as well. So we all should be treated the exact same, because when you treat guys the exact same, now everybody knows that every action has a reaction, and everybody knows that they all walk on that same pathway, and that nobody's bigger than the team. Because when you don't make a guy walk on the same pathway, now you get the rumblings of, well, you know what, this is his way. He gets to do things his way. And now you get guys like AB calling out the quarterback, and you get guys like Le'Veon Bell calling out the quarterback, because everybody's not having to adhere to the same rules and the same laws of the team.
It's amazing with the Steelers, though, in that situation, because to look at what Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell are saying, that they never bought into what Ben was doing, where if you are winning, again, the Steelers weren't, they won two Super Bowls and they've gone to a number of playoffs and, you know, had their issues in the postseason, but that they didn't accept that as a way of winning.
Yeah.
They were winning, but they didn't accept that Ben's way was the way of winning.
Yeah, and that's ridiculous. I mean, you're winning, right? But
right.
The reason why they didn't accept that is because Ben was treated differently from other people. And that's because of the head coach, the ownership. If everybody's treated the same, everybody's going to now accept the way of winning that you're doing. But when people are being treated differently at different positions because you're the face of the franchise, and I might not be the face of the franchise, now you got guys that, you know, their ego gets involved, because we all just want to be treated the exact same, whether you're a wide receiver, a quarterback, a running back, the star defensive end, or the long snapper or the punter. I mean, it's a team. You know, football's the ultimate team sport. All 11 guys need to be doing the right thing in order to be successful. If one guy messes up, the play could be disastrous. So everybody needs to be treated the exact same.
Is this becoming Elway's second best year as Broncos GM? One fan host thinks so. We'll tackle that next, but here's a Denver snapshot.